Hey, welcome back to the Better Take Charge Radio Show. Oh man, second hour, so we've got a whole bunch of in-studio guests. I'm very, very happy and glad that you guys are all here. So we've got G.I. Josie, and we have a very special active duty guest. Thank you guys very much for coming to the Better Take Charge Radio Show.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Oh, Jay Stroop's giving me some hand signals. Oh, no, he's not. We are rocking and rolling.
We're good.
So before we get into your testimony, let's talk about G.I. Josie and how you guys came about, what you guys all do, and everything about G.I. Josie.
Oh, my gosh. Don't leave anything out, huh?
Well, introduce yourselves. Lori Beth
Messner-Lopez.
And I'm Chuck Messmer.
Once again, thank you guys very much for coming to the Venture Radio Show.
Oh, thank you for having us. So appreciate it. G.I. Josie, how do we get started? The seed was planted a long, long time ago. My daughter is a retired Navy. She was in for 6 years. So, but she, when she went in, she was over on the Vincent and in the Gulf for three different tours. And it was on one of those tours that she experienced her sexual assault. And as a result of that, as a direct result of that, her life became just a living nightmare aboard the aircraft carrier. And so, and I'm only 3,000 miles away, and as a mom, And so as a mom, it was insanely difficult for me, and I find myself starting to tear up right now as I talk about it and think about it. So, and she's just one of thousands. She's one of thousands of women who have to deal with this. Right here, Amber's another one. So, fast forward. This has always stayed in my mind, and Chuck and I were just brainstorming one time and just thinking, what do we need to do? Nothing is being done. The Veterans Administration is not addressing this situation effectively enough to stop the suicides, to stop it from happening, period. And so we just brainstormed ourselves into G.I. Josie, and that's really how it happened.
It's really evolved, an evolved concept over time. We started looking at properties that were old apartment buildings, et cetera, and they're just way too expensive to make this happen. And then we there was a ranch out in San Benito County that was listed for sale, and we started saying, okay, what can we do with this? Well, we could put, you know, these little mini houses out there, but no, they're not going to let us do that because of the, you know, developmental problems, planning, et cetera. And I said, well, then we moved to the barn concept, and the barn concept just kind of clicked for everything, started falling, falling in line. And that's where we are with it now is we're going to house 12 vets with the 12 female vets that are suffering from PTSD or MSD.
Outstanding.
And so they can, you know, heal together.
That was going to be my next question. Was this like an inpatient type thing, or how exactly does the program work?
Well, it's I don't know if we would call it a program. It's a ranch community, and so the women, the Ambers, would live on the ranch until they felt well enough to move forward. And they're with their children because those children need as much help as those women do, and the children are absolutely a neglected demographic. They are nobodies.
Wow.
And so that's why the children are here, so the moms can heal, the kids can heal, they can all heal together, and then they can also they also have their comrades, so they all heal together. They've all been wounded. Every single one of these women have been wounded. Every single one of these children have been wounded.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, at this point now, it was a couple of months ago, we had Malachi Gaskin on, and he was talking about post-traumatic stress and the rehabilitation process behind a lot of things. And one of the problems is that the veteran is taken and treatment is done, rehabilitation and therapy and whatnot, and then the veteran goes back home to the same broken situation that the family is not involved with.
So
it's extremely, extremely powerful that the family is being involved in all this.
Absolutely.
I'm going to give you guys high fives. I'm sorry it took so long.
That's great.
Official high five from Dave. Yes, I've arrived.
That's only the first one of many.
So, So yeah, and we're extremely jazzed. Things are falling into place. We are working so hard to get this up and running. Every single day that we don't have this in place, we lose how many veterans? We lose at least four. We lose at least four
women.
How
many more girls do we lose?
And how many children are not being taken care of? How many children are going to wake up tomorrow without moms? And how many children are going to be orphans? And how many children are not going to call grandma and grandpa mom and dad? It's just not addressed anywhere. And at Josie, we address it. At Josie, that's what our function is.
Wow.
Our job, the way we look at it, is our job is to take suicide off the table as an option.
Oh, yes. So yeah. as survivors are here at the ranch, what types of things can they look forward to?
Ooh, therapists with four legs that eat that eat a whole lot of kibble and oats and hay.
See, the biggest problem is that these girls they go to their caseworker. Their caseworker says, "Here, take this Ritalin or take whatever, take drug A, and come back next week." What? So they take it.
Do?
What help is that? That's nothing. But at the ranch, they can, if they have a problem, they can go and ride their horse.
Yeah.
Or they can go walk their dog or, you know, play with their kids or chase the chickens or...
Plays into the intensity of having a service animal, an emotional support animal.
Right.
Equine therapy is...
Well, every single one of the therapies that we have been independently proven. So it's not like we're recreating a wheel. We're just putting all these wheels on the same place so that they can have access to a myriad of different therapies, because not all therapies are for everybody.
Right. Right,
it's just
right.
Not everybody learns the same way. Everybody's going to be different, and so this one will gravitate here, and you'll gravitate there, but there'll be something for everyone so that they can get out of their shell, they can open the blinds, and they can see that there's daylight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yeah, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you guys had these wheels spinning?
About a year and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
November 14th.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
But, mm-hmm.
I'm noticing we're getting phone calls right now. Would you guys be down to take some phone calls regarding G.I. Josie?
Of course.
Do you think?
Oh,
wonderful.
Absolutely.
Oh, outstanding. Are we ready for the phone call? Already? Ready, already, already? All right.
Caller, can you hear us? Negative.
He's shaking his finger. Oh.
Oh, nope. We're not ready for that phone call.
It's not.
Jay Stroop is still...
he's in processing the call.
Still screening, yeah. So now you guys have been here in the Monterey Bay area.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a big? This is going to sound kind of weird, but has there been a big presence of females that you have approached or that have approached you that are in need of these services?
No, there haven't, and that's only because we're just now getting the word out.
Okay.
Amber actually is, she's at DLI, she's transitioning out of DLI, and she has opened herself up to that avenue for us so that we can go in, we can talk to women, we can let them know what is going to be available, and we can let them know that people care and that we've got their back.
Straight up.
We've got their back.
Straight up. I can't wait to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you quite yet because we're going to go to a commercial break in a few minutes, and I don't want to interrupt your story and testimony, but I'm very glad that you are courageous and willing to stand up and be the face, so to speak, others hope. No, thank you. Thank you, in all seriousness. You know, because this is something that a lot of people feel ashamed to come forward with. You know, there's a lot of things, like we're talking about retaliation, or we in the past have talked about retaliation, you know, and that's, it baffles my mind that the victims would be villainized or the victims would be retaliated against for coming forward with this. Like, hey, I have a problem. And then somebody turns around and says, no, you're the problem.
Happens all the time. All the time.
Yeah. I need to do push-ups or something.
But, yeah. And then whenever we come back from the commercials, you might get a little bit angry about it. But this is a long time ago, and it's been taken care of. But, you know,
it
happens a lot. Like, it does happen a lot. And I think it's just from not being educated, not understanding. And now it's such a big thing in the military to talk about all the time. And, you know, 10, 11 years ago, it wasn't.
You know, coincidentally, I was the NCOIC of the Presidio Monterey's Army Health Clinic.
No way.
Yeah, true story. From 2008 to 2011, and we had our sharp representative. Mm-hmm. We had our EO people, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of different things. From 2011 to like now, how long have you been at the DLI?
I've been there since 2014, so
okay.
2 years.
Within the last 2 years, have you seen any kind of changes towards helping the survivor more? And again, I hesitate to use that kind of verbiage, but you know, essentially we look at the survivors as not being
victims all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, in order to become somebody who can get out of that mentality, you can't think of yourself as a victim all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, you're not going to be a victim anymore. You were just victimized. So getting out of that mentality can really help someone get through it. But yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of advocacy for coming forward and people being there to take anything. There's a whole bunch of programs, as you know. And so you have the Sexual Assault Prevention Center and SHARP mm-hmm. is what you also...
I think that was the old iteration
of
the new...
Right, exactly. And so there's a lot of attention on prevention and coming to seek help, but there's really not anything on what to do after.
And that's the part that yeah. really frustrates me. But at the same time, that it validates your presence.
Right,
Joseph.
Your existence.
You know, exactly. You know, one of the things that we've talked about tremendously over the last 18 months is that, you know, nobody's going to help a veteran quite like a veteran.
Right.
You know? And it's unfortunately, it's true because the VA tends to drop the ball over and over and over and over and over and over
yeah.
and over.
Yeah, and over.
Woosah. Oh, man. So, G.I. Josie, how many animals do you have on site, on facility?
Well, understand, we're still in the funding stages, so
okay.
we haven't broken ground yet on G.I. Josie. Right.
Light bulbs.
Yeah. Oh, great. Love light bulbs. Chuck will be the one. He is the animal taker carer of her.
Thanks.
Great. I think that's official verbiage someplace.
Yeah. We can in Monterey County. You can have basically, unless you're out way, you know, down south, you could basically have 2 horses per acre. Okay. So.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So that's how much you can keep. And then there's a water restriction. I mean, they drink gallons every day. And
I never considered that. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but I never considered like limitations or restrictions on how many different animals you could have on in
right.
an area.
Right. As far as I know, there's no restriction on the amount of dogs you can have. So, you know, and the biggest thing is that what we want to happen is that the vets can bring their service dogs with them.
Yes.
With them, because now they're acclimated. Now they got their buddy there, and et cetera, et cetera. Now
it seems like it would be counterintuitive to separate the veteran and their service animal.
Well, it is being done, though.
It's being done. Yes, by a contractor in New Jersey who gets paid to take the dog, you know, reintegrate the dog, sell the dog to an owner, and the vet doesn't get him back.
I want to know who this person is so we can...
Can't. Sorry.
Yeah. So, no, that's one of the things that we're going to put under the roof, too, is that we're going to advocate to make sure that the dogs stay with the vet.
What if the veteran doesn't have a service dog? Do you guys have a way to help them get a service dog?
Oh, we've got plenty of avenues there. We have a canine expert already... ready to go, ready to do his thing.
So he can train service dogs.
So he trains. They already train service dogs. They do it now.
Service dogs right now.
So there's not a problem there.
Just out of curiosity, have you guys heard of Operation Freedom Pets?
Yes.
Gilroy?
Yes. Wonderful.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good. Yes.
Yeah. Good.
And here's another reason that when people say, "Well, you know, are these clinical? Are these therapies? Do they do any good?" And we're like, "Excuse me, they're already being done everywhere." That's, you know, we're just putting them under one roof so the vets don't have to go to Gilroy.
Yeah, straight up.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I really
they just
find
walk
out
who their
wants
door.
To separate the veteran and their service animals.
You can't. It's like a Blackwater type corporation. I'm serious.
We're going to take a short commercial break, and when we come back, we'll pick up where we left off. This is the Veterans Take Charge Radio Show. Stand by. Welcome back to the Veterans Take Charge Radio Show. We're going to go ahead and pick up where we left off right before the break. We're getting details and insights about G.I. Josie and how they help female veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder or military sexual trauma, or in some cases, unfortunately, both. So go ahead and continue on where you left off. I'm really interested in what you guys are doing.
Well, we've targeted two pieces of property in North Monterey County, right below Pajaro. And it's a totals 144 acres, and to do our ranches. And one of the things that's going to do we're going to build our residences on one ranch, and the other ranch has a plethora of eucalyptus trees where we can put vets to work, cutting and milling those trees and cutting ranch roads, et cetera, in preparation for a development there. We can put vets to work doing that and then building security fences, et cetera, build decks, barns, all the things you do with wood. But one of the things we do need is money. We don't have $6 million to purchase the property and get going. So we do need donations. Now, I know everybody says, wow, $6 million, blah, blah, blah. Right. But think of the list of people that you know that are millionaires that live somewhere here.
Thousandaires.
Or thousandaires,
they
right.
They all need tax write-offs.
Everybody needs a tax write-off.
Right.
There are millionaires here. Right here.
Yes.
You know, not in this room, but here.
Hey, I'm working on it. Come on.
Additionally,
give me a little time.
You really, in my opinion, you really cannot put a dollar price on on the traumas and torments that these women have gone through. And I think that everyone needs to look really deep into their soul to understand that these women threw on a uniform for you. They went out to fight for you. Yes. They cried for you. They lost their friends for you. And they now need you. They need to know that the community is behind them. They need to know that we support them and that we've got their back, and we're going to help them get through this, and we're going to help them get on with their lives.
And we're about to let one of these female soldiers tell her story in just a minute. Do you guys want to put out some contact information?
Sure. Our website is www.gijosie.com. We're on Facebook at G.I. Josie TH. You can go onto the website tomorrow, because today is maintenance day, and tomorrow, and there'll be a donate button there. You can donate any amount. Any amount is excellent. Larger donations, you have to contact us, because large donations get put into an escrow account, and those funds are only released via vote by the board of directors. So that's just the way it has to be.
You know, if Bernie Sanders can run for president on like $50, $20, $70 here and there, pretty sure the American public can come together and help support what you guys are doing.
You know, it's absurd. The amount of money, I mean, the United States is ridiculous. Amazon... Amazon's spent $2.4 billion last year the past couple of years in their development. Google spent like $265 million for their place in Mountain View. Facebook, they just built $200 or $300 million campus, or just refurbished, pardon me. They didn't even build that. They just refurbished and added on. Over in Menlo Park. You can't tell me that this money is not available.
Straight up.
You know, Wounded Warrior Project got $520 million last year.
Yeah.
In donations.
Yeah. And where did they have their board of directors
over
meeting?
Over 60% of it went to administration.
Yeah, over. Yeah. Over. So, right.
This is an up-and-coming nonprofit that is boots on the ground with the people that they're actually trying to help. I think Wounded Warrior, you know, they've done a lot of good, but they have... in my opinion, kind of outgrown their usefulness, because they're giving so much, they're spending so much of it as opposed to donating it, which is what it was
donated
for.
They're no longer nonprofit.
Yeah. Would you like to tell your story?
Sure.
Go ahead and introduce yourself, name, rank, unit, and
Hi.
Go from there.
I'm Tech Sergeant Amber Vincey. I'm over at DLI. Was learning Mandarin Chinese, and so now I'm getting medically retired. Sorry. I'm starting up my own business and everything like that. And I went to a meetup, and that's how I met Laura Beth and Chuck over here. And so it was kind of a happy accident. I didn't even know what the G.I. Josie was about. And my husband, he said, you should come with me to this meeting. It's at lunch and everything. And I'm sitting there, and Laura Beth is talking about G.I. Josie and what it's all about. And I couldn't believe it. I turned to my husband and I said, this is, sounds like me, like 11 years ago, what happened to me. And some of the stories I resonate with. And as she was talking, I'm like, I need to donate volunteer my services. Because not only do I understand what it's like to go through something like this, but I also know how it is to get through it. And I do a lot of holistic healing modalities, Reiki and meditation and all those kinds of things, aromatherapy, whatnot. And it's just, you know, stepping away from sitting in front of a doctor and a doctor saying, okay, well, you're depressed and here's you some Zoloft or whatnot, you know. So my story, about 11 years ago, I just had my son 5 months prior to this incident. Friends of mine went out to 4th of July celebrations, and I had a couple drinks, and I was like, you know, I just don't want to drink and drive. I feel like it's irresponsible. And we all took a cab back to my two friends' house, and these are coworkers of mine. And so I was uncomfortable sleeping on the couch because there was a lot of people I didn't know. And so a friend of mine, who I considered one of my best friends, I told him, like, hey, is it okay if I sleep in the bed with you? But I'm not interested at all of anything. I just want to sleep. Let's put pillows in between us, you know, so you don't get the wrong idea. I was very much aware that, you know, I needed to set my boundaries. Next thing I know, I wake up and he's on top of me. And I don't know what to do because I couldn't believe it. And so it literally took me 5 days to even say anything because I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. And then not only that, you know, I don't know, I don't want to chunk all women in with this, but I felt a sense of that it was my fault or what did I do? Coming forward, I would have to, you know, open up my whole entire life to an investigation. And finally, I was just like, you know what? I have to see this guy every day. I worked with him.
Oh, my God.
And so I went to the sexual assault and SARC, Sexual Assault Response Coordinator, and I just did it as an open investigation. Well, because it was 5 days later, there was no physical proof, so nothing happened. But during the entire investigation, I was pushed out of my career, or like my career, but my unit. And I had to go work at the commander's office. Well, he got to stay in the unit and work. And I'm like, what in the world? What's going on here? And I just didn't feel very supported by my coworkers at the time. And no one ever said anything straight to me, like, we think you're lying. But that was the feeling that I got. And so I guess a month or two later, he tested positive for doing cocaine, and he got kicked out for that. But that's finally when my coworkers were like, oh, we're so sorry, come back into the shop. And I'm like,
what? just out of curiosity, was he higher rank than you, or rank or lower rank?
No, same rank. Yeah. And so it was just really a weird and terrible experience. And then 6 months later, not even 6 months later, gosh, what am I talking about, like about a month later, I deploy for the first time. And my kid is 6 months old. I'm a single parent. That happened to me, and I'm deploying. And not only like that, 2 months later, my boss sexually harasses me every single day. So I go into this deep depression, and I go to see, I don't talk about it because nothing happened with the other guy. Nothing's going to happen with this guy in my mind. And I'm 24 years old at the time, and I'm young. I don't really know better, and there was just ramping up this sexual assault awareness in the military, where it was this really a big thing. And so they were really trying to reach out and help us, but it really wasn't something that was talked about a lot. And so I felt like, you know, if I talk about this again, how am I going to prove it? Because he always said it to me whenever I was by myself. And, you know, I'm really outspoken about it now because I don't want anybody to have to deal with this kind of stuff. You know, it's ridiculous. And so I went and I got put on Prozac. And that was pretty much the end of the story. And then I got to go back and my boss treated me like crap because I didn't want to have sex with him. So every single day he would like send me out on errands and only tell me half of what I needed or the wrong time or give me the wrong paperwork. And then I'd show up and I would look like an idiot, right? So where's my credibility? So if I did say something about him, well, I'd have bad credibility because I'm always this screw up, right? So I kind of got wise to what he was doing. And so he would send me on errands and I figured it out. And in the long run, he was the one that ended up looking bad. But I never stepped forward about it because I felt like I really couldn't. And so, you know, coming back from deployment, I was just really down. I was really, you know, I just didn't know what to do. I didn't have any family really around at that time. Well, no, my mom was there, but, you know, I always kept a lot of things inside. Now, man, I talk about it all the time. But, you know, when you're young and you don't feel supported and you feel guilty or you feel like it's your fault in some sort of way, or just a whole gamut of feelings, you know, you don't want to burden other people with your problems. And that's the biggest issue, too. And the shame and all the feelings that you have, it'd be really nice. It would have been really nice to have something like G.I. Josie around because, I mean, the military is trying to help, but they can only do so much. There's only so much that can be done for you.
I was going to make the comment. You go for help and you have the story and you're looking for some sort of assistance and justice.
Yeah.
And they give you medication.
Yeah.
And say, have a good deployment.
Yeah.
That's...
And see, I got my medication while I was deployed. And so, it did help. It raised my mood. I felt better, but it didn't change
but
the atmosphere.
Change the situation.
Yeah. And I didn't speak up about my harassment until after I came back because I was just like, I just kept it to myself because I didn't think anything was going to happen because really nothing happened with the other one. There's the burden of truth or proof, right? You need to have that proof. And I had no proof whatsoever. And that, you know, and I was like, it's my fault. And, you know, sometimes people's hands are tied. There's not much they can do. But I don't want people to feel like they can't come forward right away.
Yeah.
And there are programs in the military where you can be, it's 100% confidential. You don't have to report it to the police and that they can help you. It's all throughout all four services. But after that is all said and done and they have that support system, there are times when, you know, you're all by yourself. You don't have a community. You don't have anybody that like G.I. Josie where you can go and kind of bring your child with you and have that camaraderie with your child and with other people who've gone through the same thing. And, you know, I think that it's just a wonderful program and I want to back it 100%. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, you'd made the comments that with the first situation and then going on with the second situation that you felt like it was your fault or like you had done something.
Yeah.
I can't help but question, like, where does that come from? Because that's something that
It's common
between a lot of victims and survivors. Something like, what did I do? How is
it?
And I can't help but wonder, is that initially something internally that comes in? Or is it because the chain of command is looking at you saying, hey, you know, victimizing, you know, what did you do?
I think it is mostly with that one. It was me. And then whenever I didn't get the support, it amplified that feeling. You know, I got the support outside of my unit, but when it came to getting any kind of support from the unit, I feel like it's twofold there too, because they kind of have to be out of it because there's an investigation going on and unbiased. But then again, why am I being put out of the unit? You know,
that's another thing that, again, is ass backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was 11 years ago. I don't think that's how it's happened now. I can't attest to that. I could ask around and everything like that, but that's how it was handled when I was in, and that was what happened whenever, you know, I was there. And so, I mean, hopefully by now, I know that we go through training pretty much every 6 months about sexual assault response and awareness and prevention. So it's a big thing, and that's wonderful. But, you know, there's that lag time in between, you know, while you're waiting for an investigation to go through or while you're trying to recover, where can we go?
Where's the support?
Yeah.
Especially when your entire unit, it seems to have eyes on you.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
It felt really backwards. It felt really... I felt very unsupported at the time. And, you know, some people are just really unequipped with understanding how to deal with it. And I hope that all of the programs that are happening now, we can be more supportive of people who have gone through something like this. And, you know, and be there for each other. And there's a lot of programs and everything like that. But there's a point to where, you know, you kind of don't want to go to a fellow airman or a fellow NCO and talk about something so personal. And there are times when you don't even want to talk about it. You just kind of want to be. And I didn't want to go to a therapist and talk about it all the time, you know, and it just wasn't something that I was comfortable with, and I didn't want to relive it over and over and over again. It's okay to like talk about it. Now I can talk about it, and I don't feel upset or that I was to blame. But you know, to answer your question, I think that it's almost the thing that's ingrained in our culture to feel like, what did you do in order to have this happen to you? Because there's so many people that are like, well, how is she dressing? Or how is she acting? Or she was drinking and sleeping in the same bed. And I'm like, you know, in my opinion, you can be completely naked with some guy or vice versa, you know, a girl and a guy, and the guy says no, or the girl says no. At that point, I don't care how drunk you are or how into it you are. If somebody says no, you need to stop. Like, period.
The last era, we were talking about consent.
Yeah.
And the gray area. And it's unfortunate. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Is what it really is.
I agree. You know? I agree.
There's so many questions, so many things that I want to know about this situation, and also, like, umbrella type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like when it comes to the medical aspect or the medical side of the house, like the VA and whatnot, the signs and symptoms, the fallout of sexual trauma are kind of parallel with post-traumatic stress.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it sounds like in the situation where you they give you just medication,
yeah,
you know, it's almost like they're lumping you in to one just blanket...
Depression.
Umbrella thing, exactly. Yeah. And again, there's no specific individuality, no individual care or method of... method of support, a method of help.
Yeah, and I mean, they have the SARC program or the SHARP program. There's a whole bunch of different acronyms for it, for on base and everything like that. And they have advocates that can help you, and they volunteer and everything like that. But like I said, you know, sometimes it gets to the point where, like, I don't want to go into work and talk to a fellow work person. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't want to talk to a fellow airman about my issue. That was just me personally. I just didn't want to go to work thinking about that kind of stuff. And like, they would meet me for coffee or whatever like that and be an advocate for me and answer the phone at any hour if I needed to talk to somebody. And that was fantastic. But it's those times when you go home and you're all by yourself with your kid and you feel, you know, or, you know, you could be married. And I mean, I could imagine being married at the time and having to talk to my husband about that.
Right.
That's just crazy, you know?
Yeah. We had a phone call. Yeah. 831-479-1080 is the number. Again, if you guys are comfortable with taking phone calls from the general public, I am sure that there's... I mean, this is something that doesn't really get talked about a whole heck of a lot on air, which is the reason why I'm so glad that you're here to talk about this, confront everybody with it.
There's a gal that... thank you. There's a gal that has agreed, another gal who's agreed to be a voice of, or face of Josie. She was in the Army, and she went in because of 9/11. So it's been a while. Well, she went right to Iraq from boot camp, and while she was over there, she was viciously assaulted to the point where it took five of her men in the unit to pull her assailant off of her.
Oh, my God.
Five. And in spite of that, her assailant was not punished. There was no punishment at all meted out.
We were talking about barracks justice, mm-hmm. prison yard justice.
Yep.
That's the kind of stuff that needs to happen to individuals like that.
So fast forward, way fast forward to just last December. She's still in crisis. Last December, she called her caseworker and she told her caseworker that she needed to talk, that she was in crisis and this couldn't wait. And her caseworker said, sure, I can see you next Monday. I've got an hour in the afternoon. I can see you. And she couldn't wait. And she took 90 pills, 30 Norco, 30 Benadryl, and 30 Mirtazapam, I think is what it's called. And she went for a walk on the freeway.
Oh, my God.
And when she woke up 4 days later, she was angry that she was still alive. She said, I just want the nightmares to go away. She says, nobody will listen to me. Nobody will help me. I just want my nightmares to go away. And she's still in crisis. And she's still hurting. And this happened in 2005.
Does she happen to be in the local area?
No, she's not.
Okay. This resonates somebody very similar.
Oh, no. She's back. She's back in Atlanta.
Okay.
And there's another gal who was one of our faces who was in San Diego. She was in the Marines. And she didn't suffer from MST. She suffered from PTSD as a result of what she saw and experienced. She had called back in May of last year. She called her aunt and told her aunt that she was suicidal. And her aunt said, I'll take care of it. She got her bed in an inpatient program at the local VA where her aunt was. And she called this gal and she said, okay, I've got a bed for you. I'm coming to get you. And this gal's response was, oh, good, the VA again. And that night she shot herself. So there is so much work that needs to be done. These girls need to know that suicide doesn't have to be the answer.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be the answer.
Absolutely. You know, we constantly trying to talk about how to change the culture. You know, mm-hmm. the 22 a day, 55 a day,
right.
How many? One a day is too many.
Right.
And earlier in the last hour, you know, the message that I think overall that this entire broadcast has is how do we change the culture
right.
of perpetrators, how do we change the culture right. of people who want to commit these acts of violence. Mm-hmm.
So are we going to spend the last 15 minutes doing a brainstorming on solutions?
I
mean, we've
like
got a good
idea.
One right in front of us.
Yeah, yeah, no
but
kidding.
But we need to start offering solutions while they're still in the military if this happens, and then
Straight
we need
up.
To figure out how we can stop it from happening in the first place.
Right, exactly.
Okay, we're going to take our last break of the day, and when we come back, we're going to do some problem solving. This is Veterans Take Charge. Stand by. Welcome back to Veterans Take Charge. We're going to wrap up the show here in just about 10 or 15 minutes. I had a question for Amber about the drugs that they put you on. Now, for whatever reason, the Veterans Administration's answer to everything is to drug us out, which is interesting because there's a massive war on drugs going on in this country. But for whatever reason, they constantly want to put the veterans on more and more and more and more and more drugs.
What's that as a VA on in that war?
And specifically, a lot of those drugs actually give you suicidal tendencies. Which
isn't that ass backwards?
Which seems pretty counterproductive to me if you're trying to save lives. What kind of effects did the drugs that they put you on? What drug did you say that it was?
Well, it wasn't the VA, but I was put on...
It was Army.
Air Force. Yeah, okay. I was put on Prozac for depression. And I was suffering from depression, obviously.
Of course. How could you not be after
Yeah.
that?
And so, I mean, it did help, but it didn't really get to the root of the problem.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, I was diagnosed with depression while I was deployed. And, you know, when I came back, I went to see mental health and everything like that and continued in mental health for quite a while. And, you know, the point of I'm really good at being able to take care of myself, but the fact is that you have to be able to let other people help you too. And
veterans are not always the best at that.
No.
Speaking from personal experience.
Yeah. And so, you know, being open and talking about that kind of stuff, it was really hard. And it takes really somebody who's invested in you and can really pull that kind of stuff out of you to realize that's the root problem. The whole problem that was going on with my social anxiety and my inability to connect with people and those kinds of things really wasn't the fact that I was depressed. It was the fact that I didn't deal with the root problem. Mm. And, you know, what it needs to be taken care of is really working on changing your mindset from I am a victim to I was victimized, yes, but what can we do to change that mentality and move on from there? You know, get your self-esteem back, get your path back.
Keep living.
Yeah, keep living.
And once again, going on with the changing of the culture, you know, we were talking about, if we do not stop victimizing the victim, if we do mm-hmm. not stop having different standards of punishment for the perpetrators, if we do not stop retaliating against the whistleblowers, nothing is going to change.
Yeah.
So we need to create accountability.
Yeah.
She's right.
Military-wide, on a nationwide scale. So how do we do that? How do we hold these individuals that are doing these crimes? How do we hold them responsible?
That is the question. You know, because there's part of us. There are the people that are doing the right work and trying to do the right thing. But unfortunately, it seems like they're being outnumbered by the people who are protecting the good old boys club.
Mm. Well, yeah, they're trying to protect the reputation of the Air Force or the Army or whatever. And instead, what's ultimately happening is the reputation is going to be even more injured in the long haul when all this comes out.
If they would just
handle the problem now and put a stop to it, then that would ultimately protect the reputation of the military.
The way that it's being
looked at. Because the military is bringing justice.
The way that it's being looked at right now, the way that you described it, is the wrong way. It's not the reputation of the Air Force or of the Army or of the Marines or the Navy. It's the individual's reputation.
Yeah.
It should be the individual's reputation. It should be that dude.
Yeah.
It should be this Brock Turner cat. It should be these individual people. Their reputation should be ones that are tarnished,
exactly.
Because ultimately they're the ones.
It's not the Air Force's fault that he decided
Absolutely.
To do that. Like, that's not the military's fault at all. And I don't hold, that's why I've been in for 15 years. You know, it's like, I didn't blame the military for it. I didn't just jump ship because, oh, it's the military's fault. I knew that they were trying to support me as best as they possibly could, but there's a limitation to how much support you can get. And there's a limitation. You know, we do all this training to be aware of it, and we have all these response coordinators and all of this stuff, and that's fantastic. It's amazing. But, you know, there's also needs to be more of a community to, like G.I. Josie, or, you know, there's this thing called, this girl talked to me yesterday about she wants to start this thing called Rachel's List, where girls can anonymously call out this this individual by name, explain what happened, and if like two people have the same incident with the same person, it automatically gets sent to the police department. She talked about me to me about it yesterday, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I so totally. I would support this 100%. So hopefully she does go ahead with it.
So now with all this stuff, the reputation of the Navy, the reputation of the Marines, the Air Force, the Army, of all branches, should not be dependent on the...
Actions of people.
It should be dependent on how they take care of the survivors and how they take care of the victims.
Exactly.
That's where the reputation can be tarnished.
One of the things that got me directly involved, other than the fact that Lorbeth, my sister, doesn't know how to develop land, it was my niece that this happened to, and I was pissed, because her commanding officer told her to suck it up.
Oh my God.
They love to
now,
throw that
now
term
that's
around.
That's the goes back to the good old boys network, because if she gets assaulted by her superior officer, and she knows she's not going to get anywhere there, so she goes to his superior officer, and his superior officer says, "Too bad, honey." That's the way it is.
Everybody from that point down should be held accountable.
Yeah, and up.
Yeah.
And, send it up.
And you know, yeah.
Believe me, the Admiral gets his ass in hot water. Guess what? It's going to change.
Oh, right? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's the individuals again, you know, it's bad on the leadership there, not the military. And the military's got the military's great. It's some of the people that are in the military that are not doing the right thing. And so we have to keep these people accountable. And that's what I implore everybody who's in active duty military. You know, keep your leadership accountable. Keep yourself accountable. Keep your friends accountable. All of that stuff. It's really, really important. Stand up to people. I don't care if it's your commanding officer or not. if they're breaking the law, it's against the UCMJ, period.
Yep.
So we have to keep each other accountable.
What would have happened had you taken it straight to the JAG office?
It probably would have been in a full investigation and everything like that.
So is that the direction we need to send soldiers that we hear about this is happening to that are still on active duty? We need to send them to the JAG office.
The best thing is to go up the chain of command.
Yeah.
Go up the chain of command. You know, you really need to go up the chain of command. If you want to keep it to yourself, go to the response coordinator. And if you don't want to, say anything to the police officers and stuff, there's a whole way of doing it. But, you know, if you go to somebody who's in your chain of command and they're not taking care of it, go up the chain of command.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he just made a good point. As soon as that guy's job is on the line, he's a one star, or even if he's a colonel or a lieutenant colonel or a major, he's trying to climb the ranks. He's not going to take that hit for the scumbag below him.
No.
So, bam, problem solved right there.
Exactly.
Dude's getting the book thrown
out. So if you go to your boss and your boss says, oh, well, and you go to this boss and you just keep going up the chain of command, you know, and that's what you should do. And that's, you know, if that's what you feel comfortable with and you want to do that, that's okay. You just make sure that you try to go one step up every time.
Right. And girls have to be courageous, like Amber here. They have to be willing to say, hey, look, either you do something about it or I'm going on radio and I'm going to tell everybody.
Everybody, not just females, but everybody, every victim.
And I'm saying it's you.
Yes.
Yeah. And people just really need to stand up.
Yeah.
It's about a wrap.
Man, I'm so glad that you all came. I'm so thank you very much for sharing, GI Josie, and sharing your testimony.
Yeah, just as a shout out, we're looking for these women who have suffered and are still suffering. Mm-hmm. You can email me directly at lb@gijosie.com. I promise to keep you anonymous if you want to remain so. But we really and truly need to get these stories. We're going to major funders. We still need major donors and sponsors. Please remember that.
Push out more contact information.
GIJosie.com. Facebook is GIJosieTH, as for transitional housing. Twitter is GIJosie1. And then I'm at lb@gijosie.com. Please don't be shy. We want to help. We're here to help. But we need you to contact us.
You're all welcome back at any time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
If you have other females who want to tell their story or victims in general, send them our way. We'll get them on air.
Straight up.
This is Justin Baker coming at you from the Veterans Take Charge Radio Show. Thanks for listening today. We'll be back next week at the same time, 4 p.m.
Brad Steadfast will.